Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Matt.
How you doing, Rob? You all right?
Yes, I'm doing great. Thank you, mate. Yeah, it's all this WhatsApping and Skyping and Zooming. It's a bit challenging for an old metalhead.
life in 2020. Hey, how things have progressed, but in many ways, just gone off the rails altogether.
You know, I can remember looking at that calendar and going, oh, 2020, it's going to be amazing. It's like living in the future. And then look what happened. You know, it's been a right old rigmarole, hasn't it, one way or the other?
Well, I remember when we were going into this year, and obviously when you approach a new year, it's kind of everybody's tendency to get excited about it and plan ahead and look forward. And because this was a new decade as well, everybody was like, the roaring 20s, they're back, here we go. And then, God, 2 months later, it's just like full meltdown, full collapse. We're figuring it out as we go, though, and there is light at the end of the tunnel, I feel. And certainly for me today, I just finished reading your book, Confess, which is out now. And I absolutely loved it, Rob. I loved it so much. And I read a lot of biographies as part of the job, but just for pleasure as well. And this one's really got it all, as you would expect for an icon of your stature and somebody, you know, that's led the quite eventful, incredible life that you have. But the thing that I loved really the most about it, and I found this with Ozzy's book as well, is I'm from Solihull. So I've spent my whole life in and around Birmingham. And when you're talking about your upbringing and your childhood, the streets, the pubs, the characters, all these things are so familiar to me and resonate with me on such a deep level that it increased my enjoyment of the book tenfold. It was so good.
Well, thank you for those wonderful words, Matt. You've made me feel great, and I really appreciate them. You know, when I've never done a book like this before, and I probably wanted to do another one again. But you know, I'm writing this book with my mate Ian Gittins, because he's the guy that put it all together. I mean, I just sat there and flapped my lips for like 50, 60 hours, and he was able to really take my personality and put it onto the pages, because that's the feedback that I've been seeing. It's like you're having a conversation with me, or rather, you're listening to me yabber away. Look, just coming off the pages, and to some extent the same way with the audio book. But that's wonderful, and it's especially nice to know that you're a local lad as well, and that Ian's captured that flavour, because, you know, our surroundings, our upbringing, you know, family, friends, location, everything like that, it seeps into us, doesn't it? It makes us the people that we are.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And home is very much where the heart is, no matter where you reside geographically. And what I also loved is, no matter how, you know, big Judas Priest got and your world was removed from this council estate upbringing in Warsaw, is your outlook and your attitude and your sense of humour throughout all of it, and this all comes across really well in the book as well, has remained distinctly, how shall we say, Midlands-esque. And
yes,
I love
yes.
that.
Well, again, you would know that, but I think that's just a trait from not only the Midlands, but I dare say the UK to some extent. I'm very proud of who I am and where I'm from in that type of thing. And yeah, you know, you don't put yourself on a pedestal. You get on with it, as we say in the book, and you do your best, and that's it, you know. And I think that I'm so pleased that I had that instilled into me by my mum and dad from a very early age.
The thing about the book as well, Rob, is it's so incredibly candid and moving and deeply personal. You know, there's tragedy in there, there's heartache, there's suicide, there's death, there's some really heavy stuff. But at the same time, it remains this undeniably positive, uplifting, life-affirming read as well. Was it difficult for you to trudge over a lot of these details and experiences and go through your past in such a relentless, uncompromising way? Did it suck it out of you?
I've always used the reference that since I've been clean and sober for like 35, 36 years now, that's made me a stronger person, Matt, you know? And I'm just more open and honest and truthful about just talking about anything. And because of that place that I'm at now, I was able to address some of the more darker moments with the great guidance of Ian Gittins, who's also a local lad.
Nice.
I didn't know this. He's
yeah.
in the same neck of the woods as us. So you see, that probably made it a little bit easier for me to talk about some of those deeper incidents. And I said to Ian, you know, right from the beginning, well, what kind of book is this going to be? I mean, do you just want the music, the band? And he goes, no, it's got to be everything, you know, it's from your earliest memories and everything that's happened in your life. He said, no, I know some of the things that have happened to you because I've done the research, not in any great depth, but I'm aware of some of these things. And I think it's important because, again, we need to tell your story as completely as we possibly can. So I did have to... You know, he was great. I'm sitting in the kitchen in Walsall, and we started off in Phoenix, and we end up in Walsall, and some of the heavier stuff happened in Walsall because we were going through it, you know, in the timeline of events. But, you know, you sit there with a cup of tea and a hobnob, and you just pour it out, you pour your heart out, and I'm glad that I did, because those darker episodes, they're important. They're important to address and not hide, because mental health is a primary issue here on many levels. Again, whatever value that these particular chapters have in bringing up the subject of suicide and mental health and what have you, in today's world, more than ever, it's vital that we keep all of those channels open.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, today, although there's still a lot of work to be done in regards to mental health, but also with, you know, gay and trans rights, the world's come on a lot since, you know, your heyday, but there is still a lot of work to do. And I think when you share these experiences and you put yourself out there in such a way that you let people know the journey you've been on and let them know that they're not alone, it, I think, reaches people in such a way and brings people together. And I guess, you know, obviously you couldn't foresee in a million years this pandemic coming, and you touch on that at the end of the book. But I think now more than ever, we need to keep these communication tools open, don't we? And stay connected, even if we can't be physically near each other. It's important now more than ever, especially with mental health stuff, to keep connected and plugged in to our basic humanity, right?
Absolutely. And it's on a worldwide level as well. It's just across the entire planet. And thank goodness we've got some of these amazing technological advances, you know, to either text or Zoom or WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever. Imagine if this had happened in the 50s. Well, of course, there were pandemics. There were pandemics. There's always been a pandemic every now and again. I don't know how people were able to cope in those times, because we've got some of the tools now that we didn't have then. To keep in touch with each other, it's very important that we do that. If your friend hasn't given you a text or a call in a day or two, just what's going on? You all right, mate? You know, just reach out, because just talking is just the most beautiful thing in so many ways, and particularly dealing with this particular issue that we're having to fight and slowly get to the end and find that you know, light of the tunnel type of thing.
Before you got sober, Rob, what do you think it was that got you through some of those really horrendous experiences and real isolation and depression? And, you know, there's moments in the book where the band Judas Priest is on top of the world. You know, you're doing the US tour on the British Steel album campaign. You're flying high. You're absolutely killing it in a professional sense. But, you know, you go into open detail about how you spent a lot of the time on that tour, you know, having been single for 5 years, basically just rolling up to like truck stops in Texas and trying to find some sort of sexual gratification from strangers in toilets just to feel a connection. And it sounds like such a low moment in your life. And obviously at that point you weren't sober. What do you think it was that got you through those times? Was it just sheer resilience?
Well, it was that, but it was also my bandmates that I loved then and I still love now. We support each other. Of course, those particular things that we're talking about were never talked about. But it was just, it's just being with your mates, you know. That's just a big thing, just hanging out with your mates like you were in a band, being on the bus together, doing the shows. The music, 1,000%. The music is the healer. The music is the substance. I'm able to get on stage at that particular tour and scream my tits off, as I call it.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel better. You know, it's like when you go to the gym or you have a jog, you know, you feel better afterwards, don't you? So all of those things were kind of helping me deal with the things that I was going through.
The realities of being gay, you know, for the entire 20th century, really, like it's hard for me as a straight man to fully comprehend and understand what that must have been like. And your book, I think, is so important for shining a light on that. And, you know, even like early on, some of those experiences with older guys kind of really taking advantage and things. And obviously when you're kind of coming to terms with your identity and you don't really know that world, you talk in the book about how initially you think, oh, maybe this is just how gay men behave, like they kind of prey on vulnerable people, because that was, you know, your introduction and all you knew. It was a hard time, wasn't it?
Yeah, you act things out, don't you? Things happen to you, particularly in your younger life, that stay with you, and then you act them out later because you've had no kind of guidance. I didn't know any gay people. I didn't go to clubs or bars or anything like that. I didn't know what to do. You know, so I was acting out a lot of the things that happened to me, and that happens. You know, it's not a lot of these things that happened to me, Matt. They're not exclusive. You know, horribly, they've happened to a lot of people,
yeah.
And particularly in the areas of bullying, which still goes on now. It's just a cruel trait that humanity has to bully people. You know, particularly in sexual identity. And particularly people in our community that choose to display themselves in a way that some people, you know, don't like or they find offensive or whatever, and so they're bullied, you know, and in some cases they're physically bullied, and that's horrible, you know. I can't understand why that's still there and what it makes people that way. Maybe they too are acting things out, you know. So. It's complex to some extent, and again, keeping the channels open and having broad conversations, keeping the whole connectivity moving, slowly but surely you chip away at that bigotry and that hatred, and I've always said, Matt, you know, if you attack me, I'll take it, because I need to know why. You know, I won't dismiss you. If you have a problem with me, I won't dismiss you. I'll welcome you in. Come and sit down, have a cup of tea and a hobnob with me, and we'll figure out why you're feeling that way. Because it's just a peculiar thing that some of us go through, and I'm always intrigued as to how and why these things happen.
That's a rare frame of mind to inhabit in today's world, and I wish more people were like that, that you can't meet hatred with more hatred. You've got to meet them with compassion and empathy and understanding and try and see their point of view, right? And then you can close down the barriers and the differences and the gap between you and try and get on the same page somewhere, start there and then go from there.
Yeah, fear is just a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of understanding, you know, and once you once you have an opportunity to explain things and talk things over, all that kind of dissipates. It may not completely vanish, but at least you're giving everybody the benefit of a deeper understanding of the issues.
You talk about it a bit in the book, and I imagine there's been so many people over the years, and I know for sure that there'll be loads more after this book, but you must have had so many people thank you and approach you and sort of say, until you took that stand and you came out and you expressed yourself and were honest with yourself and, you put yourself out there in that way to the world, that helped me to come to terms with what I've been going through. And that must be a beautiful thing, to be on the receiving end of that and see that positive wave sweep over the metal community.
It's beautiful. You don't expect it, and everything is every reaction. What is it? Every action gets a reaction, whether you're aware of it or not. And so when I formally came out on MTV all those years ago, and this again was before the internet really and texting and so forth, people would send me letters and notes and just say, because you did this, I did that, and that's great. And I think a lot of us in the LGBTQ community can relate to that. There's always a catalyst. There's always a moment, either from reading about something or hearing somebody say something, and remarkable things happen. You're unaware of it for the most part until you somebody gives you a hug, it's a meet and greet, and big burly guy goes, "Oh, thanks so much, mate. Thanks so much, mate. I'm a gay guy too," and it's wonderful. And let me just walk that back a little bit, because I really like to be precise when I'm talking about things like that. It's any kind of person. When I've met friends like me that just say thank you, or a bit more time to talk about the issue of sexual identity, it's an absolute blessing.
Could you imagine, Rob, if the internet was around when you came out, you would have broken it?
I don't know about that, man. I don't know, but I'm breaking it at the moment with my gargling moment. There's a funny thing that's floating around the internet right now, and I have fun with it. I have fun with it because I'm already seeing some pushback, but I have fun with it. I'm not an aggressive person by any stretch of the imagination. I talk about that in the book, that because of some of the incidents that happened to me as a kid, I don't like confrontation. I don't like shouting, screaming people. Firstly, that's just a waste of energy. But as a result of that, I still have difficulty in dealing with confrontations as we define them. But who knows what it would have been like if we'd have had the internet from day one.
What would you say to anybody listening to this who is a young person, perhaps struggling with their, identity at this point in life? What kind of words of encouragement and advice and support would you give them?
I tell you, first and foremost, that you're not alone, because you do feel alone. You feel strange, you feel odd, you feel like you don't fit in. And all of those things are okay to feel that way, because you're on a journey of discovery. And then if you can, just take that step. And if you're a young person, especially, know that your mum and dad love you unconditionally, and that they're there to support you like my mum and dad was, is a little bit difficult with me and my dad at first, but he accepted it because, he loved his son. And so that's important to know. Your mum and dad aren't going to kick you out of the house. Same with your mates and your friends. You really find out who your true friends are when you're dealing with something like this. And more often than not, it'll be, "That's great. Yeah, we still love you." Again, the resources are there. Text, all the different websites to go to that you can get help from, and there's probably places in your local community. There's an enormous wealth of opportunity for you to find some comfort and some peace of mind, and get to the place where you are destined to be and you're entitled to be, which is to live your life like you want to live your life, not living your life because it's being made for you by the choices of other people.
Amen. And I think everybody deserves that, don't they? And everybody should enjoy that freedom and that security in themselves, because that's where you find contentment, isn't it? You talk about that a lot in the book. You say, like, when you came out and when you got sober and you really got your head straight, it all followed. You know, life just seems to find a way, doesn't it, of working out for the best when you're just at peace with yourself.
It does, yes. And the thing to remember as well is that you're never alone. You know, you might think you're by yourself, but you're not. There's always something there with you. And I discovered that as I went through my recovery, because some of those things that I went through, I don't know how I got through them, Matt. You know, it just seems extraordinary. But there's this beautiful thing that surrounds you that is there, you know. Eventually you might find out that you're never truly alone, and that again is a great comfort and peace to have with you day to day.
You talk towards the end of the book, obviously, with lockdown being the way that it is, a lot of us have had loads of time on our hands to reflect and look back. And you say, like, I can't believe this has been my life, all these things that I've seen and done. And I won't give away a lot of the stories, because there are some great stories in this book that I want to remain a surprise for people when they read it. But I have to ask you about Mickey Rourke, because he, for me, Rob, is one of the, if not the greatest actor of all time. I love his work so much. There's so much spirit and heart and soul in that guy, and he's just a true artist. And I know he's kind of had a bit of a bad rap over the years for being a little bit outspoken and wild. But for me, he's just this beautiful soul. And there's a story you recount in the book where you're doing the great movie Spun with Mickey, and you're doing scenes with him and stuff, but you've got terrible food poisoning, and so you're basically evacuating every hole that there is. And why don't you share what Mickey did for you on set when he heard that you were sick? Because it's a beautiful story.
It was a long ride up from San Diego, where I lived at that time. They sent me a limo, which is very nice, but I'm still rolling around curled up in fetal position in the back of this limo, having to stop at every McDonald's and gas station to use the loo. But eventually I got there, and put me in this trailer, where you get your makeup and your clothes done. And then there's a tap on the door, and it's Mickey Rourke. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Mickey Rourke. And he's there with his little dog, his beautiful little dog at the time. And he goes, how you doing, man? And I go, okay. I heard you got the food poisoning. He goes, yeah, man, it's horrible. Come with me, I'm going to make you some chicken soup. And I'm like, hang on a minute, what's going on? First of all, as you say, he's the most brilliant actor. And now he's offering to make me some chicken soup. But we went to a part of the catering, and he was sat there chatting about this, that, and the other. And it was as though we'd been friends forever. He was just such a beautiful man, you know, and he's imposing, very, very strong looking bloke, you know, and physically in his face, and, you know, but he's been so sweet and gentle, and he wouldn't put his dog down. I don't know whether he still got that dog, but that dog was with him, joined at the hip. He only put the dog down when he had to shoot a scene. But he was beautiful. He was beautiful, you know, and we did some scenes together. And then I was slowly getting a little bit better, and I waited around for a few hours before I was like, I don't know if I've got to go. But I watched him work.
I was going to ask you, how was that? Because, you know, you've got background in theatre before music. You're obviously a creative and an artist, and you recognise talent when you see it, whatever the medium is. And what was it like being up close and watching a master like that, like, just do it, do the thing?
Yeah, because he just switches it on. You know, he knew his lines. He did this one big speech, did it in one take. Jonas was the director, Jonas Ackerlund, and are you ready, Mickey? Yeah, let's go. You know, and then he turns it on, and I was just dumbfounded. I don't know, you know, and I've got some friends that do this kind of work, you know, name dropping, like Johnny Depp for one, and then Yul Vasquez for another. I've not seen those guys work per se. I've seen their work on film and on television, but it blows me away that they were able to switch on to this character and do it so precisely and nail it. You know, I have nothing but the utmost admiration. They make it look so easy. That's why they're so good at what they do. And it's not terribly difficult because here's the thing. When you get to know somebody, right, and then you see them doing that, it's like another person. The conviction, they take you away on this fantasy trip, like all movies are fantasy for the most part. And, you know, it's make-believe. It's like a fairy story, and you're actually believing in it, you know? And that, to me, is the greatest gift, that they can take you from the real world into theirs and make you believe in it. That's terribly difficult to do.
And he's just the master of that, isn't he? He is, for me, as good as it gets. What a great story with the chicken soup as well.
there's good soup.
There's some amazing... I mean, you've got a great Andy Warhol story in there, which I won't give away. Johnny Depp, who you mentioned, is in there as well. There's a moment at Live Aid with Jack Nicholson. Tell me about that experience, that day, you know, the biggest gig on earth. You're on the New York side. You've got Sabbath out there, Zeppelin out there, so the Midlands representing. I mean, what comes to mind when you think back to that day now? It must have seemed like such a surreal, bizarre dream and just one of the greatest days of your life. It must have been.
Yeah, because they're just a lad from Warsaw in this great band, and then you're looking at all these incredibly strong, talented people that you're sharing the stage with. I was there all day. We got there just after breakfast, and I stayed there till, was it midnight or so? And it was this constant kind of, it was like Sunday night at the Palladium, if you remember that. The stage would turn around.
Yeah.
So while you were performing, the other band was setting up.
Yep, yep.
And it was like a revolving stage. It was going on all the time. And I was out in the audience for the most of the day. I was there with everybody, all the fans, you know, screaming and yelling for all of these great people. Mick Jagger and Tina Turner, you know. We went on just after Crosby, Stills and Nash.
What a segue.
It was all over the place. It was. I tell you, it was brilliant, Matt, because, like a lot of our British music festivals, we just blow the doors off as far as, like, it doesn't have to all exclusively be this kind of music. You know, music is music and it's mixed up. And that's a great way to enjoy music, to take the blinkers off and just try and have a go at listening to everything, because you never know what you're missing. And so it was for me on that day, but it was mind-blowing, you know. And then the end of the night, when I'm at this bit of a fancy do in some penthouse in Philadelphia, and there's a guy leaning up the corner, it's Jack Nicholson. You know, I'm like, should I say hello? I'll say hello.
The coolest guy on earth. He's got to be.
Coolest guy. Unbelievable. So again, it seems that all of these professionals, you know, all of the people that have been in the business for a long time, are so grounded. They're so approachable, you know, they're so lovely. And Jack was like that with me. We were having a bit of a chit-chat, and then some drunk guy comes, oh, Jack, flew out the cuckoo's nest, man, fucking shiny, bro, and all this kind of stuff. And Jack smiling with his smile and his eyebrows.
Yeah,
nice to meet you, man. And this guy wandered off, and I said to him, do you get that a lot, Jack? He goes, all the time, you know. Yeah, amazing.
Who's your favourite person you've ever met? Would it be our Majesty herself, Queen Elizabeth? Would she be the most special and memorable star that you personally have met because of, you know, your fondness for the royal family? And that must have just been, as you say, when you're a kid and you saw the Queen come to Warsaw, and it was like this amazing moment, and you thought she was waving at you, and then to get to finally meet her, and the circumstances around that day, incredible. One of the funniest parts in the whole book, that chapter was so good.
I've always loved the royal family. That's just the way I am. Everybody's got different feelings, but they are a family, and they've been very open in recent time about the things that they've gone through as a family, like most families do. I thought that was wonderful when they opened everything up, because I think that's endeared us to them even more. But again, for a guy from Warsaw going through the gates of Buckingham Palace and then walking up the steps and going into the big music room and seeing all these other amazing people, Brian May and Status Quo, Kate Bush, tons of people, Scylla by herself in the corner, who I latched myself on to.
Black for everybody listening. Yeah, she becomes your mate date for the day, doesn't
mate
she?
Mate of the night. Yeah, she's my blind date for the night. And then, you know, the equerry comes over, would you like to meet Her Majesty? Well, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And then she's there, you know, and she's just like radiating. The thing about Her Majesty is that she does that it's just magical. I don't know whether it's just the mystery or the history of the royal family, because, you know, the family goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in the DNA, but she's glowing. She's literally glowing, you know, as she's standing there in front of you. And, you know, Scylla's like, he's come all the way from Finland, Your Majesty, because she's met the Queen several times, obviously, at that point. Oh, really? Yes. What kind of music do you play? Heavy metal. Oh, heavy metal. Why do they play it so loud? You know, I'm like, oh my God, the Queen has just said heavy metal. You know? But and then I'm trying to shake her hand, and Scylla's going, don't dig me in the ribs with her elbow. Don't shake hands with the Queen. Well, I don't know, Scylla. You know, I don't know. World protocol. And so, man, you're absolutely mad. You know, you can't make this thing up. You can't make it up because it's real. And that's just a beautiful, cherished memory.
Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes, isn't it? And certainly with your book, there's certain moments in that where I just think, like, you could not write this stuff. The Andy Warhol story, you couldn't write that. And I wanted to ask you, I know you're a big fan of Lady Gaga. Have you seen the news the other day? It was announced Miley Cyrus is going to be doing an album of Metallica covers. Did you see this, Rob?
I did, yeah. I'm a bit of a news hound in that respect, Matt. You know, as soon as I wake up, I turn my phone on and I'm checking to see what's happening in the music world, entertainment and so forth. That's amazing. She's incredible.
She
Miley's
is.
Miley's voice.
She's phenomenal.
Survivor. If you think about her life in show business from being a little kid, now she's kept her head on straight. She went a bit mad for, you know, as a teenager, which you should do. That's your right to go a bit mad as a teenager. But she was expressing herself. But to read that, I can't wait. I can't wait. It's going to be great, you know. She did Fleetwood Mac song.
Yep.
I can't remember what it was now. But she has an extraordinary voice, like Gaga. You know, the voice is everything. But to think that, and she's a metalhead, you know, she's always giving the horns up and sticking a song out. But she's just amazing. She's somebody else I'd love to meet at some point if the stars ever align.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For you personally, because you've obviously been on the receiving end and you've probably kind of had to deal with the metal elite many times in your past, you know, whether that's through your own musical excursions into, you know, quote unquote non-metal music or just in the kind of the public forums and stuff. And you must see it a lot, like, you know, that's not metal and whatever. But I love that you're just so unashamedly open about what you like. And who's to say that you can't be the biggest heavy metal fan in the world and also like, you know, Lady Gaga and Miley Cyrus and people like this? Like, music's music, isn't it? And if it moves you and it makes you feel and it's authentic and honest and sincere, then
yeah, exactly,
you like what you
that's
like
exactly,
don't you?
What it is. Yeah, of course you do. And, you know, again, it might be a bit difficult as a teenager because you've got peer pressure from all your mates and, oh, you don't like him or you don't like her, do you? They're crap, whatever. That's natural. But, you know, you claim your music for yourself, don't you? I mean, my phone here that I'm talking to you on is rammed full of all different kinds of music, every kind of music. I love it all, you know. And I find it tremendously interesting as a musician. And a lot of it is inspiring, you know. Musicians are always inspiring each other. And it doesn't have to be from your particular genre that you're attached to and that you love. I've always been a metal maniac and always will. But I'm not stupid, you know. I know that there's just great things out there in the music world that are waiting to be checked out.
If you were to meet a fan, which I'm sure you have in the past, and they've said, you know, you can't be a metal fan and like this, what would you say to them? How would you try and appeal to their common sense and say, well, come on, get on board, give it a go?
I tell you, it's probably one of the few things in life where it's kind of difficult to change your point of view.
Yeah.
And that's because we claim our music, don't we? We really claim into it, we really dig into it, and we possess it because it's something very special to us. And there's a unique relationship that each of us have with the music that we love. But I found that as I've moved on in life, for example, I think my musical acceptance for all the great things out there is a lot different now in my 69th heavy metal year than what it was maybe as a 13-year-old. You know, that's just a fact because that's the way life goes, and your choices and your opportunities are always changing. But there's so much good stuff out there, you know, and it's at your fingertips, which I never had as a younger person.
Well, I'm hoping you make this collaboration with Gaga happen at some point. You talk about how it nearly happened in the book, and I would love to see and hear whatever you two decided to do together. I'm sure whatever it would be, you know, exciting and fresh and completely unique. And what a talent she is as well. She's great.
I love it. Women power, girl power. Bless them. You know, we wouldn't be here without women.
Amen to that.
None of us blokes. We wouldn't be here without beautiful moms and women are so strong and powerful, and especially in music. Just citing her and Madonna and Miley and my friend Mariah from In This Moment, and going back to Vinegar Joe with Elkie Brooks and Janis Joplin and Shirley Bassey, and oh my God, you know, the power of women can't be understated.
You just reminded me there's a good little Madonna story in the book as well. I nearly forgot about that. I'd love to pick your mind on spirituality, Rob. I know spirituality has played a big role in your life, and I'd love to just hear about your personal stance, where you stand on your relationship with the unknown and how your connection to something bigger and deeper has kept you, you know, in the life that you're accustomed to. How has it kind of kept you happy and sane? And
it's an interesting story because, you know, when you, I don't know whether it's part of the school curriculum now, but we used to have religious studies, I think as they call them. And they were very broad based. They weren't, you know, specific to one faith. It was a pretty wide education as to all of the different beautiful faiths that there are in the world. And so that was with me as a teenager. I didn't really think much of it because you don't do when you're a kid that kind of stuff. It doesn't really mean anything to you personally. But it was obviously in my head as I moved on in life. And I think that, you know, I've understood now that there's always been something or someone or whatever you want to describe this thing as. It's with you. It's with you, whether you believe in it or not. It's there. And so that has always been there. And I found out more about that when I became, started my clean and sober journey 36 years ago. Because you have to accept, you have to try and find an acceptance that there is something going along with you to, I don't know who's trying to call me up this phone. It's, It's politics over here. My phone is blocked, but I'm still getting robocalls to vote for this person, that person. Sorry about that.
No worries, mate. Not at all, don't worry.
Yeah. But you know, in my clean and sober life, that's been important to me. It brings me great peace, you know, for lots of different things that I do. I utilize it every day. I believe in meditation and prayer because that works. It works for me. I've had my encounters with the unknown, as I talk about in the book.
Yeah,
clairvoyant.
Pearl was an incredible story, and
Pearl.
I've never had anything like that in my life, but the way you detail it, she's telling you all these intimate details and private moments that you and your you know, your previous partner who passed away, Brad, you shared with him that nobody else would know, and she's like quoting word for word verbatim what happened, and that must have blown your mind. Was that when it all changed for you and you realized there is life after death?
I was always curious about this, you know, all these ghost things on YouTube and so on and so forth, and paranormal activity. There's so much about life that we still don't know, you know, because it's all, we live life on the surface. We're just very reactionary. We don't really go deeper, and to some extent we don't need to. But if you choose to look at it deeper, you find some remarkable things, and it's like UFOs and all that kind of stuff. It's fascinating to me to try and think, why are these things happening? Are they even real? I don't know, but don't dismiss it. Investigate it, you know. And it's the same with me and my spiritual journey, you know. And that's just important to me. And I'm not a Bible thumper. Never will. But I just understand and appreciate how valuable that part of me is in the connection that I have with it.
It must have been so heartbreaking for you as well on so many levels. Like, historically, I know that rock and roll music and metal in particular has been blamed for, you know, so many atrocities that it really has nothing to do with. And whether that's church groups or, you know, the PMRC or anybody like that. And obviously you guys had the worst example of that when the courts in Nevada came after you for that horrible, really unfortunate incident that, you know, again, you had absolutely nothing to do with. And you had to go to court and everything, and it must have hurt you as somebody who is a spiritual person who loves to think that anybody would think that, you know, anything connected to you could be responsible for inciting anything negative at all, let alone something as horrendous as that.
Yeah, I mean, the simple accusation that you're making music that can make people harm themselves is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. That's never been a property of music. Yeah, there are some elements of music that are very, very powerful and potent, but there's no perception there that as a result of that, horrible things are going to happen. That's just crazy. So we couldn't believe it, you know. We thought it was just not exactly a joke, but we never felt that we'd be given a subpoena from a sheriff as we stopped up the tour bus in Texas, and you've got to appear in court on this day at this place at this time or you'll be jailed. That's what a subpoena does in America. So we didn't have any choice.
And you took the stand, didn't you, Rob?
I went up there and did my bit for us all in the band, and it went further than that, you know. The terrible side of that whole story was these two beautiful lads that lost their lives, and they were just mad for priests. They loved heavy metal.
Yeah.
But the mixed up place that they were at with the, you know, the booze and the drugs and the dysfunctional family and the game that they were probably playing that went terribly wrong, it was awful. So we were there, you know, thinking about those boys and trying to represent them as best we could by saying that, no, our music is just the opposite. Priest's music has always been destined to uplift you, to make you feel good, you know, to overcome difficulties and challenges in life. We put that in our words, you know, sometimes not black and white, but they're there. Priest has always been this beautiful band of hope in a lot of respects.
I love learning about how a lot of your lyrics so early on were very open about your sexuality as well, and they just went like completely missed for years. It's quite baffling, isn't it? It must have been baffling to you. You must have been banging your head against the wall going, when are people going to see and read between the lines?
Yeah, especially with that one song, Raw Deal, after Sin album. I'm talking about Fire Island, which is this. I've never been to Fire Island. In all my years, I've never been there, just for, I don't know why, but it's this great hangout where all the guys go, and it's amazing, and a lot of my friends have been, and they go every year. They can't go this year for obvious reasons, but it was just a story. It was a story that I wrote for this song called Raw Deal, and it's a very interesting song, that is, because it talks about not only the place, but it also reflects about where I am. I think there's a line in there that goes something like, I used to dream in statues alive, and I used to dream in pictures, now I dream in colours. It's a little bit abstract. And then there's the end phrase, which is a famous quote, which is love, love, nowhere, no laws, which it doesn't. Love doesn't know any laws. There's no laws directing love, who you can love, who you can't love, you know. And I thought that was, I don't know where that came from, but there it is. It's the outro of the song. But there was that song that was on that album, and for the longest time, it was a song. You know, nobody really put two and two together. Not that that was ever my agenda, because I have never and will never use Priest for my own personal, you know, agenda or expressing my feelings about this, that, and the other. Everything that you hear from Priest is agreed upon. We support each other 100%. That's why, you know, I'm always there when everything's being done, because we're always looking after each other's needs and the best ways to express ourselves musically. But it is a remarkable song, and it's only been in recent years that even now people are listening to the music, rather listening to the words and trying to figure that out.
I think any lifelong fan of your band is going to have a field day learning about all the, you know, the different meanings behind songs and experiences making records as well. Whether you're out in Ibiza or at Ringo Starr's place, there's some great behind the scenes rock and roll stories, and there's some of the tour stories as well, from being out with AC/DC on the Highway to Hell tour, touring with UFO. Of course, as well, today, it was just announced, obviously, the rescheduled dates for your huge tour with Ozzy, and obviously this year has been so tough on so many bands and fans. We've all been denied live music, and it was great to see today that tour has been rescheduled. It's announced, and fingers crossed this thing, you know, is taken care of, and we can get back to business as usual. And you know, that tour has to happen because it's going to be so good, and I love the stories from the book about you singing with Sabbath. You know, for the Aussie No More Tours tour in 92, also Ozfest in 2004. Old friends of yours, two iconic Midlands bands, and that's just the tour that needs to happen, isn't it, Rob?
It's going to be brilliant. And let me just quickly take this opportunity, because this is the first time we've had a chance to address it. We want to thank our fans for being so patient, you know, because I know it's terribly disappointing. We're just as disappointed as you are, because we've had to make this change again. You know, Ozzy had this terrible accident, so the we had to reschedule then. And of course, we were all set to go. We were all hoping that by now that something might have happened as far as a vaccine and so forth. But it's not. This terrible second surge is happening. So we thank everybody for their patience and their care and their understanding. And it will happen. It's going to happen. It's destined to happen. When something like this has been kicked around a bit like a football, we're going to get it. We are going to get it into the back of the net.
Yeah.
So I know it seems like a long way away, but it's not really, because we're almost at the end of 2020. And there's still a lot of recovery having to go on in 2021. Even though we intend to try and do our best to go out and do some of these rescheduled 50th anniversary dates. Ozzy doesn't want the vaccine just yet because he doesn't want to grow antlers, he said the other day. I'm not having the vaccine yet. I want it to be tested. I want it to be you know, make it work. I'm not going to be jabbed and then grow a pair of antlers. So was it.
And we talk about a survivor right there. That guy is a machine.
My God. Oh, he's amazing. Especially on top of everything else, he's dealing with what Glenn's dealing with now, with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And they're a beautiful example of strength and power and hope and resilience to still live an active, productive life. And so, yeah, it'll be happen. And it seems like this is just going to blow the doors off. When this does happen and that tour starts in 2022, it's going to be the biggest thing on the planet. You know, everybody's going to want to see it for lots of different reasons.
And you've obviously stood in for Ozzy, and we're all rooting for him, and we know he'll be fine. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be an opportunity for the two of you to get up on stage together and blast him out. And, I mean, for me as a Birmingham guy, I just feel so much affinity for those two bands, and they've just really kind of put not just metal music but Birmingham on the world stage in such a great way. And I'm rooting for you guys, and I cannot wait for that tour. It's going to be magical, Rob. I know it is.
Yeah, especially our hometown gig in Brom. It's going to be extra special, that one, for sure.
Will the inflatable bull be making an outing on that tour?
I, that's one thing I kind of kick myself in the arse for saying, talking about that, because I love surprises.
You blame the cover, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I hope you make it happen.
It's going to happen. Having said that, everybody's like, what's this bull about? I'll tell you, it's going to blow your mind, man. It's going to blow your mind. Because I haven't actually seen it in life. Yeah, I've got videos of it and clips as it was being made by this amazing company in the Netherlands. And I still watch it every now and again, and it happens in seconds. And it's like it's there, and it's just, oh my God, it's just there, you know. And it's just going to be such a great exclamation point to everything that we love about heavy metal.
And celebrating the bull ring. And I didn't know anything about the history of it beyond, you know, the sort of the meat market stuff. And it was great getting an insight into that. Have you seen Peaky Blinders, Rob? I imagine you're a fan of that.
Oh, God, massive fan. Why are they only doing so many? They only do a few episodes, don't they?
I think that's the best thing to happen to the Midlands since Priest and Sabbath. I really do. I think it's really made Birmingham a kind of a cool, chic, hip, world-renowned spot again. Like, everybody all over the world loves that show, and it's been such a great thing for Birmingham.
Yeah, especially when you go over to the Black Country Museum.
Yep.
And you can walk the same streets where they did a lot of that shooting around the canal, the cut, and everything else, you know, some of the factory settings. You can see it in real life. That's a great day out, that is. I urge everybody, if you can, to go and have a day out at the Black Country Museum. You learn so much about our part of the world, Matt. And is there a story in the book about my niece and the piece of coal?
She's never seen coal before. She's asking you what it is, and you're like, hey.
What do you mean? Are you winding me up? It's coal? What's coal? Oh, come on, back here. Yeah, it's coal. What does it do? You put it in the fire. What do you put it in the fire for? So there's fire, there's heat, it'll keep you warm. We've got central heating, haven't we? Oh, God, okay. Sit down, let me explain all this. A bit more detail, you know, and then you tell the stories of these amazing men and in some cases little kids that went down the coal mines, you know, to draw coal and the back of a horse and back of a donkey or whatever. It's remarkable. We have such a rich, beautiful history of tradition in the Midlands, as there is all over the UK, but particularly from our part of the world. It's a very endearing little story in the book, that one.
I have to ask, as we approach the end of the conversation, Rob, and I don't want to be dour, but you do, you know, you address it towards the end of the book, and you talk about you're getting older and you're thinking about, you know, the remaining years of your life. For you, will you go out with a big bang, do you think, with Priest and do one last victory lap? Or I mean, have you sat round and discussed with the guys the future of Priest and whether you would like to do a sort of a farewell thing at some point, or are you just going to keep rocking and take each year as it comes?
I love the Rolling Stones. I whenever I think about this, think about the Stones and what Mick and the boys are doing.
Just keeping on rocking.
If they can do it, we can do it.
Yeah.
You know? Again, it's inspiration, isn't it? I mean, I've always said as well that for me, particularly as a singer, it's my voice. If my voice can still do the business, and it's not becoming embarrassing, then I will keep doing it. You know, I love it. I also feel that there's a responsibility, because I've said a million times, for us in priests, we can't be who we are and where we've got to and the beautiful life that we've had without our metal maniacs. Your fans sustain you. Your fans give you inspiration and urge you on to the next album or to the next show. So who wants to let go of that, you know, apart from that commitment that you've made with each other? So, no, I don't think they'll ever be there. We had a little bit of that moment with the Epitaph tour, and that went off kilt, you know, kilt. It was just like, it was never intended to be a farewell tour in the reality of things. It just got very miscommunicated. So we've been down that road. And I think that, you know, just keep doing it. And that's what we'll do with Priest. You know, we'll keep forging the metal.
I love it. Long live Judas Priest. Well, I'm sure you've been asked this one before, Rob, but what does heavy metal music mean to you, and what do you think it's given you on a personal level? How has it affected and impacted and changed your life, if you can summarize it? Obviously, that's a huge open-ended question, but I'm sure you've thought about it over the years, particularly this year in lockdown. Like, what would life have been like without heavy metal?
It's hard to imagine, because it is such an inclusive part of who I am as a person. You know, I'm a 69-year-old metalhead, and I listen to metal every day. And again, it sustains me. You know, I don't know where I would be without it for so many reasons. But I'm just blessed. I'm blessed, and I'm grateful, and I'm thankful to our fans for keeping us here, and to the rest of the lads, and everybody's in the life of Priest. This band can go anywhere in the world, and we'll have our metal maniacs waiting for us. And that's also a thrill, because we've always flown the flag of British heavy metal. So when you stand on a stage in Brazil or Australia or Tokyo or Moscow, you know, you're doing it for British heavy metal, and that's also something that us in Priest have been very proud of.
Rob, I just want to thank you for the music and for sharing your soul in the book, and just for everything that you've done for the Midlands. And it's just been a real pleasure and a joy and an honour having you on the show today. I've really enjoyed talking to you, mate. And yeah, you're the best. Thank you for everything.
Same here. We'll have a cup of tea and a hobnob when it's safe to do so.
Well, hopefully Bloodstock will go ahead next summer. You guys are set to be headlining right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Are you going to be there, Matt?
100%,
mate. You're going to go to Bloodstock?
100%. I'll bring my book along and ask you to sign it if I can find you,
I'll be very happy to. Yes, I'll be very happy to. Fingers crossed. I think by then we should be sorted. I mean, all these vaccine trials are speeding along, and I mean, it could come at any moment, this great vaccine that we need, like the flu jab. I've already had my flu jab for this year. but by then, I've got a feeling we're scheduled to kick off again, I think, the end of May, start of June, and everybody's pointing to the summer of next year as being the launch point, you know, that we can all be back with each other again, because we miss it. We miss shows, don't we? Not just metal. We miss all of these beautiful shows, the festivals especially. They're really special. So we miss being with each other. And hope and optimism, you know, you got to live with that. And we'll be seeing each other next year.
It's a big year for you next year as well, the big 7-0, isn't it? So how great would that be to get back out on the road, doing what you love, 7 decades in?
Yeah.
Quite a
can't
life.
Wait. Can't wait, yeah. Going to be brilliant. I'm so excited to have that opportunity, so bring it on, I say.
My final question to you, Rob Halford, before I let you go, is this: if you had the choice and you could have any act touring today, when touring is a thing again, once concerts start over, who is, in an ideal world, the first act that you would love to see live, to reintroduce yourself to the experience of gigs, if you could have anybody still doing it?
I don't know.
See, these are the things you've got to start thinking about now, mate.
I know I have. I mean, I don't know. I'm always excited about new bands that are out there, you know. And not so new band is Royal Blood. I love Royal Blood. I love what they do, you know. Are we talking about a special guest as an opening act? Is that what we're talking about, Matt?
No, just you, as a punter, because what I loved about your book is even though you've stopped drinking, you still go out to gay bars and gay clubs.
Yeah.
And even though you're a lifelong musician, you still go out to shows all the time. And
yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So you're obviously still into the idea of just being a punter at a gig. So that was what I was intrigued to know. If you can get out of the house and go see a show, what's the first one going to be? Miley Cyrus doing Metallica.
Exactly. I'd love to see my mates. Love to see my mates Iron Maiden. They're a great band, you know.
There you go.
So I'd run out to see them for sure, and then Tom with Rage Against the Machine, which I hear is, they were supposed to be going out this year, weren't they? But they'll be going out. And then Maynard, who lives a couple of hours away from me, with Tool, another great band. I'm all over the place. There's three different expressions there. Nurgle with Behemoth, you know, Ishan with Emperor, if it ever gets back together again. Whitesnake, Scorpions.
You're going to have a busy calendar then, Rob. You're going to have a busy calendar.
metal musical feast, that's for sure. Yeah, all over the place.
Congratulations on the book, mate, and congratulations on just a great life. And like I said, it's been such a treat having you on. Thank you.
Been a pleasure, Matt. I've really enjoyed myself. Look after yourself. Wash your hands. Wear a mask. Do all the things that the scientists tell you, not what the politicians do. And we'll get through this together and see you in the big 2021.
See you on the other side, mate. You take care.
All the best. Cheers. Bye-bye now.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.